Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Engine. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Cole Hornaday.
Hey, Ben.
Chris Casso.
Hello.
And I was told to say this, old lady Nicole Lamb.
Hi. My back hurts.
Oh. It's been 80 years.
Oh, and she's spitting all over the place.
I'm frothing. It's just, it's quite a journey here.
A little bit
here.
Of drool, you know.
Well, getting old is not pretty at all.
God, stop it.
Cole is 54. Gross.
We haven't done that in a while.
Yeah.
I don't have a cell phone.
Man. Still.
Yeah. I'm 36. You're 54, yeah.
Yeah. Ben, how old are you now?
I'm 43. 42. I'll be 44 in March.
I love how we all have to think about it. I tell everybody my age just so I don't forget it.
That's really the only reason.
Hello, I'm Nicole. I'm 34.
See, you didn't even... I'm 36.
You know, I remember being a kid and my mom's friend, Linda, for whatever reason, one of the few memories I have of being over at Linda's house and playing with her son, who's my age, Joel, is she was talking about her age at one point, and she said, at one point she had to call her mother to find out how old she to remember how old she was. She's like, Mom, how old am I? You know, and I being like a 10-year-old, you're you know exactly to the month how old you are because your birthday's coming up and you're gonna be 11. And I'm like, it made no sense to me that somebody would not know how old they were. And but now at my age, I'm like, how old am I? Oh, that's right. That's right. I'm 43.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to do math to figure out how old my mom is. Yeah. Like, she's 33 years older than me, so she's this age. Yeah, I have no idea.
Fortunately, my parents were both born in 1950, so doing the math on how old they are is quite easy.
Nice.
Anyway, we're not talking
this
about
this is
it.
Our just, age podcast. The ages thank podcast. You. Yes. Thank you for joining us today.
Welcome to Age
we'll
Talk.
We'll talk about many ages.
Huh? Anyway, today I want to talk about hyperbole in the comics industry. More specifically, every comic seems to be highly anticipated. Dark Horse is the latest culprit with their title Bang from Kint, Torres, Kim, and Pycos. I wish I had their first names handy. But, Matt Kint, sorry. Wilfredo Torres, Na-Young Kim, and Nate Pycos. Accolades. This is from the article at BrokenFrontier.com. Accolades are rolling in ahead of the series debut, and they have pull quotes from Keanu Reeves, Mark Millar, Brian Michael Bendis, Jeff Parker. You know, when I was making DVDs for a living, and we made this one web series, and we wanted to put pull quotes on the back. So we emailed this dude that we knew in the industry, and we're like, hey, can we have you say, and we gave him the quote. Can we put this on the back of the DVD and say that you say it? And he's like, yeah, that's great. So I can only imagine that some form of that might have happened here. The people at Dark Horse are like, write to Keanu Reeves and say, you know, we're going to use a quote.
Can you just say this out in the open somewhere and we can say you said it?
Exactly.
You're breathtaking, Keanu Reeves.
So, yeah, it's like, they call it one of the most eagerly anticipated comic debuts of 2020. And so my question to all y'all is, A of all, is this effective? B of all, how widespread is this in the industry? And C of all, CA, does it work?
So A of all, we're jaded, so no.
Well, I also think that consumer readership actually follows reviews over pull quotes and hyperbole.
Yeah, in general.
Yeah.
Yeah, they want word of mouth.
Yeah.
They want to see what people are twitting about.
what the twit has to say.
Yeah, because I'm old, what was B again?
How widespread is it? Is single comic highly anticipated, or do you get a comic from some publisher like, this is coming out?
This is a thing we're doing.
Like it or not. Yeah, exactly.
I think hyperbole is pretty widespread.
It's pretty widespread. I mean, it disappears once you get to like issue 2 or 3 or so, because they're like, we can't keep saying it because it's boring. Mm-hmm. But most first issues, they're like, ooh, highly anticipated next project by Scott Snyder and Charles Soule. Right. You know, it's like, yeah, you gotta say a thing.
I'll read the next thing Charles Soule is writing.
Oh, you should be reading the Undiscovered Country then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you probably should.
Maybe not. Or Cole's holding Star Wars.
Yeah.
Maybe Star Wars.
I like the things I've already read, and that's it.
There you go.
I'm setting my ways. Exactly. I actually saw him at Emerald City.
Yeah.
Charles Soule?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I didn't talk to him.
You waved a picture, and I'm like, Lando Calrissian?
I saw Lando at Emerald City. He had a booth.
But yeah, no, it's just part of the industry. They gotta pump up the jam on this stuff. They gotta get the hype going.
Yeah.
Get people excited because every voice is trying to be heard over the other. So I can't blame them.
What else are they supposed to say? Like the realistic thing is just like, it's good.
You should buy it.
It's competent.
Yeah, we got 30K pre-orders. That's something in the industry.
I can't wait for the cynicism to invade the marketers for comics.
Has anybody
pre-ordered Bang?
No.
Nope.
Nope.
Nope. I'm sure I'll get some people because Matt Kent does have some fans here. Mm-hmm. But this sounds mean. His star has not fallen, but he's not Jeff Lemire. See, to me, they were in the same space about 6 to 8 years ago, and they were both like doing like Marvel books at the same time. And like, so for me, it's like Kent Lemire, same guy, you know, same stuff, both kind of like weirdly odd versions of normal stories. But like, because Lemire does like, I don't know, 50 books at once, Kent doesn't do that. So it's like people just aren't paying attention to him as much.
Right.
And because right now he's doing...
Is there a new volume of Mind Management out?
The new
Mind Management's
printings.
Over. Yeah. And he finished Grass Kings with Tyler Jenkins, right?
Right. Yep. Bang is coming up.
Bang. Yeah. I don't actually know what he's doing right now.
Yeah, I feel like... Oh, wait. Wasn't he doing the one with the kids, the Black Badge?
Oh, Black Badge. But wait, isn't that over?
That might be over. So there you go. So we're having some real troubles here trying to remember
Matt
Kent.
Remember our Voltrons tonight. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Cole.
No, I had nothing to share other than to say, though, maybe it's a good time for the marketers to be saying, extraordinary, brilliant, Keanu Reeves. I read it in the bathtub.
Yes. So this makes me sad, too, because Matt Kent did a book called... not the Perhaponauts, that was somebody else. Basically, he was doing the Challengers of the Unknown because he couldn't do Challengers of the Unknown. Mm-hmm. And he did it with Scott Collins. And I actually really loved it. No one cared. I couldn't get anybody to buy that book.
Do you remember the name of the book?
I'm trying my hardest.
Euthanauts or whatever?
The Euthanauts. I'll be right back. Talk.
Okay. All right. We'll talk amongst ourselves.
The Civil War was neither civil nor a war.
Discuss.
I'm reading some of these poll quotes and... Grape nuts are neither grapes nor nuts. Brian Michael Bendis.
The Pastaways.
It's the Olive Garden Pastaways. Free breadsticks.
He did a series for Dark Horse called The Pastaways. And like nobody got into it, and I couldn't get anybody into it. So
it's our punchy third episode.
Yeah, we're there.
So nobody could get into Pastaways.
Yeah. I've never even heard of it, but it sounds so fun.
It is. I'll show it to you after this.
But I've known Chris long enough to know that like when he gets brokenhearted over someone not getting excited about a book he thinks is neat, it hurts him. Don't do this to him anymore.
Yeah.
Although I think we found the next best pull quote to put on the back of a book. I've never heard of it, but it sounds so fun.
Yes. Yes, that should
be the realistic marketing.
That would be best. That's positive, but it's real. Yeah. It's genuine.
It's genuine.
It's authentic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I would love to just have somebody like Ben to say, I'm too busy, but it sounds good.
They trap me in an elevator. It's great.
There's insurance commercials right now where they... Like where the doctor walks in and...
Oh, I love those. Just got reinstated.
He walks up to the patient and he's like, are you nervous? The patient's like, yeah. It's like, yeah, so am I. We'll figure it out, and leaves the room.
I'll see you in there.
Yeah, I'll see you in there. You don't want... I can't remember what the tagline is. You don't want...
Who cares?
Oh,
but I think it's a car insurance commercial.
I think some of my favorite pull quotes have always been the creator or the quoter saying something like, damn it, I wish I got there first. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's honest. There you go.
That's actually one of the best bits of... feedback I've ever seen from a professional. It was Mark Mothersbaugh, who it was the lead singer and songwriter of Devo. And Weird Al Yankovic did a song that is in the style of
Dare
Devo,
to Be Stupid.
Dare to Be Stupid.
I know this song.
And
yes,
and it's not a direct parody of a Devo song, but it's in the style of. Yeah. And Mark Mothersbaugh is like, it's perfect. Mm-hmm. I hate him.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. It's in the Transformers movie. Yes. That's how we know it.
I know it well.
Oof. Anyway, you two who order books, do you pay attention to any of this stuff when you order?
No.
No. Yeah. No.
I base it all on if it looks interesting to me because I know the creators, or if at least the concept sounds interesting.
Yep.
I don't care what somebody's got to say about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I don't trust anybody else's opinion on that subjectivity kind of stuff. The amount of times, like, give you an idea, there's one of my favorite books was Black Sad, and it's a fantastic European book. And the original prints that I got, the first translations, had a pull quote from, I think, like Jim Steranko or somebody, and like it's like a really good quote. No, it's like Will Eisner. I think it was Will Eisner. Will Eisner saying like, this is the best example of how you create art. You know, it's like it's a really good quote. The new printings, they replace it with Stan Lee, and Stan Lee goes, this is he basically says something like, as good as it gets. And it's just like, why would you replace? Oh, I know why you would. But, yeah. You know, so yeah. It's yeah. Like, so I just don't trust any of those, you know, because yeah. those are the decisions. They go over the name recognition, over the quality of the content.
The toughest, when I was doing theater marketing, one of the things that bugged me the most about marketing a show was when, like, the artistic director or manager would say, well, here's a quote from the Broadway production. I'm like, yeah. Uh-huh. Why are we using it?
Yeah.
Well, because it's about the show. I'm like, no, it's not. Unless the quote directly references the script or, you know, what the impact a character has, then that's not our production. And yet every season I had to like go find a quote from a Broadway, and they do it all the time, which is deceptive because like you're talking about a production that no one in this organization has seen. It's but the play and the playwright, anyway, it's marketing's baloney.
So I take it that pull quotes on previews don't influence your decision to read a comic.
Not in the slightest. I'm with Chris. It's the artists involved. It's the concepts. You know, maybe sometimes the publisher.
Yeah.
You know, I'm gonna take a long hard look if it's Vault.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. If I see something that pops up in the catalog from like.
Which one?
Petite.
Magnetic
Press. If I see Magnetic Press pop up, I'm like, oh, what you got over there, fellas? So, you know, there will be just certain times where it's just like a little chime in the darkness. And I'm like, yes, come look at this.
Mm-hmm. All right, last thing I'll say on this. I'm currently holding Preacher Book 4, which is War in the Sun. Thank you. That's what I'm looking for.
You're welcome.
It was right there.
I'm so glad I could help you out there.
But the pull quote on the very front is from the Portland Oregonian, which I think is an interesting source for this property.
Totally.
Anyway, let's move on to Book Report, everybody.
Okay.
And
the pull quote should just be like, it's Preacher.
It's Preacher. You're gonna buy it.
Yeah. You know what you got.
All right. Cole Hornaday.
You should be thanking us.
Chris, do you recall who was doing the previous Marvel Disney Star Wars series?
I thought
series?
It ended with Greg Pak.
It was Greg Pak.
Was it?
Greg, yes.
Okay.
And I thought the stories, I was really enjoying that Star Wars series that basically filled in the space between A New Hope and leads us up to the events of The Empire Strikes Back. Greg Pak, I love as a superhero writer and an Asian voice in the arts community, but God, I was getting so bored. It just was like, and I honestly started to feel like I was reading comics from the later stage Marvel Star Wars comics. Mm. Oh, by the by, I'm talking about the latest Star Wars comic from
so we know.
From Marvel Disney. I'm just going to call him Misney from any run out. It's written by
Darvel.
It's written by Charles Soule. I was pronouncing it Soule for so long, but
it's Soule.
It's Soule.
Soule.
Charles Soule, artist Soul. By Jesus Saez. And so this one is the follow-up. So it's a whole new series, but it's just eponymously titled Star Wars, which is kind of misleading because this one takes us from post-Empire Strikes Back and is going to lead us to, I'm assuming, the events of Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
We're in an interesting period when we're still kind of filling in these gaps in time and story timelines of the original trilogy because you kind of gotta ask why. Do we need to? What's the barometer for me is Jason Aaron. When Jason Aaron was writing the Dark Horse Star Wars books, it's like, were they necessary? No. But what I loved about it was that he got the tone, he got the universe, he got the characters, and there were moments where I was like, I could see this in the cinema canon. I could see this moment in the cinema canon. And that makes me feel good. And that
and he
makes
had
me,
fun.
And he had fun. Mm-hmm. Greg Pak was like so meditative, and he was fixating on sociopolitical stuff that just killed the story, Greg. Killed it. And I actually was going to be done with the whole Misney Star Wars stuff because I don't really know if I need it in my life anymore. But my friend Chris dropped this on my box. And I was, oh, heck with it. Anyway, so this one is interesting because I am kind of asking, do we need this? But, you know, Soule gets it. He gets the tone. He gets the characters. And I kind of buy that if we were living in that continuum with these characters, these are the events that really happened after Empire Strikes Back and leading us to Return of the Jedi. Also, Jesus Saez's artwork is darn near photorealistic.
He's really good. Photorealistic without being slavish.
Yes, and the colors are beautiful. The architecture is perfect. All the images are incredibly cinematic, and it's really a lovely read, and I don't regret getting it. It just was, at the time, it was one of those books. It's like, do I need to keep reading Star Wars books? No, but you know what? This was a really sweet read, and there's no reason not to keep reading it right now.
I have a question about Star Wars property. How many comics are just called Star Wars?
That's the only one right now.
Yeah.
Right. Everybody now. Else has a subtitle.
Yeah. So, but how in all of Star Wars comics history, if I just did a Google search for Star Wars number one, how many comics would I find?
Without the addition of other subtitles, you would probably get at least 5.
Yeah, Marvel's ran 75, 78 issues.
And then there's the one right before that, so that's 3 right there. And then Dark Horse had at least one that was just Star Wars.
Correct.
That Brian Wood did. I want to say there's one I'm forgetting at that point.
Oh, Brian Wood was the other writer over at Dark Horse that, like, he knew what he was doing, too. He had the whole tone down, so.
Cool. All right, Star Wars number one, the latest one.
That's
Thank
right.
Thank you, Cole.
The latest one.
Nicole, what do you got for us?
Well, I was lucky enough to get an advanced reader copy, not for sale, so don't ask me, of Remy Boydell's 920 London. And Remy Boydell did a graphic novel with Michelle Perez called The Pervert through Image Comics. And this is Remy's own thing. It is described, when I looked at it online, it was described as part memoir. And the story, I think one of the characters might actually be Remy, or at least reminiscent of Remy. It follows, I'll just read the back because it makes sense, and then go into it. A doomed romance between two emo kids set in London in 2005. More than friends, less than lovers, they're trying to grow shrooms before the world ends. Dive into this heartfelt and authentic story, perfect for fans of Meredith Grand's Octopus Pie and Tilly Walden's On a Sunbeam, neither of which I have read. It is... So I have a lot of feelings, and I've been thinking about it for a really long time, because I read it, I think, a couple weeks ago. And when I first read it, I was very underwhelmed. And then I thought, well, that stinks. I love Remy's art. I was really anticipating this. I follow her on Instagram. She does these anthropomorphic kind of foxy dog kind of creature peoples. And I just like it. It's very watercolory. It's very sparse. And so I was just so excited about it. It's broken up into different chapters. Like, first they're trying to go get shrooms, then the second thing is, like, kind of dealing with their relationship that's not really a relationship. And the thing is it's one of those comics that I think is like a Drawn in Quarterly comic, or maybe a Fantagraphics comic, where it is the independent stuff that is more meditative and self-reflective, but in a very shallow way that brings maximum impact for the reader that is the jam of, if that makes sense. And I think that's why it let me down so much, because I was expecting more story. I read The Pervert and I loved that. I really enjoyed it. But it had more backbone to it, even though it still had its sparseness and its melancholy. This one is, one of the characters is a trans woman. They're, you know, young 20-ish somethings. And the other girl is a self-obsessed little, like, beautiful, possibly with an eating disorder, who wants to become famous in LA one day. And they're living in, like, outside of London. And they're trying to go to parties, and they're trying to gain, you know, some sort of momentum in their, you know, 20-something lives, trying to carve a path out. And the other one is I think the person who's supposed to be Remy is somebody who's, they're all talking about the end of the world, and she's like, I've tried to do therapy, I've tried to do all these other things, it's not working, I'm really depressed, maybe shrooms are going to help. And I don't really know why. And I don't know. It's a weird one for me to review, but it's something that I felt like I needed to, because I think it has a place in this world, and I think it's something that's really close to Remy herself. I know she's very excited about it and very proud of it. And I just don't know that it was my particular jam, but I know I can already see people who I know this would be their jam, because they're in that mind space. Like, that's the kind of stuff they like. They like that meditative sort of, I'm not really doing anything, but I'm feeling everything kind of comic. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm actually... Mm-hmm. Am I saying things?
No. What you say, I picture exact books right okay. now. So yeah.
Yeah, it's and that's what it is. And I was kind of hoping it had a little bit more, like, backbone to it, or if it was longer, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, like, if we drew it out even further, like, this is the year of their life or something, but it has time gaps or something like that. Did the shrooms work out? You know, what happened to the girl? Did she go to L.A.? Did they fall out, you know, just
the
any
zoom was
thing.
Too specific.
It was, yeah,
kind of pull out a little bit.
I think so, because I got to the back, and the back had these wonderful little pinups of the girls, and there was so much, like, brimming personality in these different pictures.
But not in the actual story.
You know, it's like these little, like, we're taking pictures, we're sticking our tongues out and going, hey, you know, like that kind of stuff. Like, hey, we're scene kids, you know, we're like these, you know, sad emo girls, and we're just going to party. But, like, you didn't really get that in the comic. Mm. And I found this to really enliven me, while the other portion was a little deadening. So
maybe it's in the editing. Maybe, like, it's some of that stuff should have been intermittent amongst the main story.
Maybe, because it would have helped maybe the pacing a little bit, like you have a high point and a low point or something.
Yeah.
So I don't think this is either good or bad. I think this really comes down to a taste preference, because I think that the execution on this has a whole motherland where it will be among many, many friends. And we'll definitely have an audience. So I hope this does well for Remy. That's why I think it hurt me a little bit, because I'm like, Remy, go! Yeah, you're getting another comic. I'm really excited for you. And then I'm like, oh, it's not for me. Fine. So 920 London comes out April 22nd. So you can still pre-order now. It looks like it's going to be $18, 136 pages, full color. It's rated M for maturity. There is some nudity in there. And there is some talk of suicide and mental health issues and stuff like that. So you know, that's what it is. Okay, the end.
Okay. Thank you, Nicole.
Totally petered out there.
That's okay. And finally, Chris Casso, what do you got for us?
So if I had read this in 2019, this would have been in my top 2019 list.
Oh my.
This is my jam now. So This is Witchy by Ariel Slamet Reese. And it is published by Roar, which is an imprint of Legendary? It's an imprint of something.
Roar? Oh, Lion Roar. Forge, Lion which Forge. Is now Oni, which is an entity
Loony.
Loony.
And if you are a fan of Avatar The Last Airbender, this will be your jam as well. Basically, in this land of magic, there's a map.
I'm already in.
Yes.
Give it to me.
In this land of magic, your magical ability is gauged by how long your hair is. It's the potency and your skill.
Nice.
But if your hair goes too long, then witch burners will come after you. Damn. And you are called into the service of the nation at a certain point, depending on the length of your hair and all that. So the main character is a young girl who her father was called upon. She never saw him again. And you're led to believe that he was probably taken and probably murdered. And she's now living, and she has long hair, but she has no control over her magic. And so she disguises it with like a glamour. So everybody thinks she has short hair and that she's kind of the useless kid in school. And there's a range of interesting characters that they introduce. You're following her school life, her disguising who she really is. And there's one relationship that's very interesting because she had a best friend and he still is best friend, but she kind of is reclusive now. And so he also has made a new friend who is actually kind of like the school bully. And the school bully takes a lot on the main character, Nineveh.
Oh, you're coming at me for help? Yeah.
Nineveh.
Yeah,
Nineveh. That's the main character. And but they have like an amazing moment throughout the series where they're taking these tests to see if they can be accepted into the National Guard of witches. And the school bully, you have to be seen by a medic who is going to be your same gender. And the school bully is basically they won't let her see the female medic because they're like, well, your records say you're not female. And it's so she's a trans character and her parents refuse to change her documentation because in this culture, the eldest male will receive all the land and they want to make sure that goes a certain way. And so like her teacher like goes up and she's like, I told them about this. Make sure she sees a female doctor, you know? So mm-hmm. like, it's just really interesting character building throughout the series. It's very emotive throughout it. I love the art style. The main character basically doesn't want to become part of this system because it's what killed her father. She, runs away and I just want to give away too much more. but very engaging, amazingly paced, strong art style. It's a one woman show. Ariel Slamet Reese did everything in here. And I can't wait for the next one, and I have no idea when it's going to happen. So that makes me sad. I want it now. And so, yeah, highly recommended, all ages appropriate, really well done.
Cool. Witchy. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chris. Well, that is Book Report, and that is our show. Coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfectly Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comics Engine here, 319 Northeast 45th Street, beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsengine.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or however you get your comics. Base podcast at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And now, friends, get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time this week. The questions come to us from me.
What?
Last week, we talked about the Image publisher lamenting that there are just too many comics out there for stores to stock. Here are five other examples of an instance where just too many things caused the headache, or worse. Number one, these are multiple choice. January 15th, 1919, Boston's North End neighborhood. A large storage tank filled with 2.3 million gallons of what burst, rushed through the streets at 35 miles an hour, and killed 21, injuring 150. Was it A, beer, B, molasses, or C, cow urine?
Molasses.
It is locally known as the Boston Molassacre, and for decades afterwards, residents claimed that the area still smelled like molasses on hot days.
Alan Moore taught me that.
I can't imagine. Anyway, number two, September 13th, 2019, Georgia. A truck traveling a bit too quickly on I-75 in Atlanta tipped over and spilled what onto the highway? A, 216,000 six-sided dice. B, 500,000 packs of cigarettes. Or C, 1 million clacking teeth toys.
Six-sided dice.
Dice.
No one was hurt in the incident, although the road received plus 756,193 damage, and the truck lost 525,743 dexterity. Number three.
Nice.
July 29th, 2019. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, unless it's a happening of biblical proportions that news sites and visiting tourists can't help but feel the end is nigh after witnessing what? A bush outside of Harrods exploded into flames, but was not consumed by the fire, which led one gambler to believe it was the sign from God to lead all of his cash out of his wallet and into the land of slot machines. B, a swarm of locusts so large it showed up as a rain cloud on local radar. Or C, a woman sitting in the cafe at Caesar's Palace asked for a glass of water but was given a glass of wine, leading her to believe that her server was the chosen one.
I want it to be C, but I think it's B.
It is B, the most realistic of all of them. It was a swarm of locusts and it showed up as a rain cloud.
That's great.
Number four, July 9th, 2017. Pissling Germany. Forgive me, I'm going to butcher these names. Wolfgang Lieb, Tom Riekeneder, Rudy Dietl, Joseph Zellner, and Hans Maurer had what? Certified by Guinness as the world record largest. A, sausage. B, lederhosen. Or C, hamburger.
Hamburger.
Hamburger. It weighed 2,566 pounds and 9 ounces and consisted of 3 meat patties, tomatoes, lettuce, cucumbers, onions, hamburger sauce bun, and countless wasted hours. And finally, number five. I'm sure all that food went to waste as well. January 19th, 2020, Newfoundland. Residences of St. John's opened their doors on the morning of January 19th only to find what? A, a 35-mile-an-hour flood of molasses. B, 216,000 six-sided dice. Or C, 3 to 5 feet of snow.
I would say 3 to 5 feet.
It is a 3 to 5 feet. A bomb cyclone delivered an historic one-day record snowfall in Canada last week. And that is quiz time. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye-bye.